Hey, this is David Rosen from the All Points West Network, and over on Awesome Movie Year, the podcast that takes a look at different years in movies and why they were awesome movie years. They're currently finishing up their 2003 season with a look at the Oscars Best Picture winner, one of the biggest of all time, The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. And because Josh and Jason and myself all watched the entire trilogy to get ready for the episode, we decided to also do a very special episode of my podcast, Piecing It Together, taking a look at the movies that inspired The Lord of the Rings and at the movies that it inspired. So we get to talk about a whole lot of other movies along the way, adventures and quests and all that kind of fun stuff. So check out Awesome Movie Year, check out Piecing It Together, and check out the other podcasts here on the All Points West Network. Hi, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we have got a wild one for you. We are going to be talking about Zola from writer-director Jenixa Bravo, based on a series of tweets by Asia Zola King. It is a weird movie that we have been looking forward to for a long time here on this podcast. Of course, it got delayed after the pandemic and all that, after its initial premiere at Sundance last year. But it's finally here. It's out in theaters. Hopefully you go see it, because it is something that definitely should be experienced. And joining me to talk about it is Ben Miller from Ice Cream for Freaks and The Film Experience. We had a great conversation about Zola that is coming up here in a second. So, as always, I want to remind you first to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together, because we have a lot of podcasts coming your way, lots of episodes, lots of regular episodes, special episodes, all kinds of stuff happening on this podcast. So make sure you're subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what we're doing, you could, of course, share the show with your friends. That's always number one. I sometimes forget to mention that, but it is, above all else, the best thing you can do if you want to help support what we're doing here on Piecing It Together. But you could also rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Just got a nice 5-star review the other day. I always appreciate those. Also, you know, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And also, don't forget, we do have a Patreon. If you really love what I'm doing, you could subscribe to the Patreon. You get early access to Piecing It Together episodes. Soon there will be some special bonus episodes that won't end up on the main feed. There's actually already some special bonus episodes, because I do these monthly wrap-up things. So there's already that. There's also bonus content from Awesome Movie Year, which is another great podcast that I produce. And then there's stuff from my music career. So lots of great content over on the Patreon. Produced by David Rosen is the name of it. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Check it out. So yeah, that does it. Let's get into the conversation. Let's talk about Zola. Let's do this. All right, so we are going to get into Zola today, which should be a lot of fun. Joining me is Ben Miller from Ice Cream for Freaks and The Film Experience. Ben, how's it going, man?
It's going great. It's a beautiful morning. Happy 4th of July, by the way.
Yes, yes, to you too. This is a good way to start the day off, right?
Exactly.
Talking about this insane movie.
Oh, no, exactly. Insane is the best way, possible way to put it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, before we do get into it, it is your first time on the show. Why don't you tell my listeners a little about you and what it is you do on your site?
Yes, I own the site icecream4freaks.com. It's a film site. I do a lot of just film reviews, Oscar predictions, kind of run the gamut. I also have a feature. I ran a feature for the last couple months called Oscar Justice. And every Friday I go through the Oscar categories and essentially award a rightful Oscar to somebody who deserved it in that category. And then I follow the breadcrumbs down the line. Mm-hmm. For example, I gave Sean Penn the Oscar in 1995, which took it away from Nicolas Cage, but gave him one in 2002. And then that took that one away from, see, I can't even remember my own stuff. So yeah, so it since Nicolas Cage got that one in 2002, it took one away from Adrian Brody. I don't think Brody ever got one again. But then Penn also lost his in 2003, and Bill Murray got his, and then Penn lost his in 2008, and then Mickey Rourke got an Oscar. So it goes all the way down that crazy stuff, and some wild, interesting areas. But
that's interesting. Yeah, it's like the whole time travel thing, where, like, you know, if you change something, something else is going to change, and it's like you can't just change that one thing that you thought you were going to do.
Exactly. There's a couple rare occasions whenever it works out perfectly. Like I gave Michael Keaton the Oscar over Eddie Redmayne, and that was that. There's no
repercussions. Well, that's perfect, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
exactly. You're not going to give Eddie Redmayne the other Oscar he got nominated for, and Michael Keaton's never been nominated again. So, and I had a strict rule about never giving, like, oh, I gave Michael Keaton 7 other nominations. No, I just stuck to the actual Oscar nominations, and then kind of follow those repercussions.
Yeah, that's great. I like that concept. That's a lot of fun. So yeah, let's get into Zola. There's a lot to talk about here, and we're gonna get into it with the puzzle pieces and everything as we get into the conversation. But you know, this was a big movie coming out of Sundance last year, and one of the biggest, I think, of the big delays, at least, you know, not counting the blockbuster, you know, movies, The Bond and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Was this one that you had been, like, really looking forward to over this past year while we've been waiting for it?
Yeah, it was definitely something on my radar, because the big thing for me was I've always been a kind of a, I've had stock in Riley Keough for a while.
Sure.
And every time I see her, I'm like, okay, she's eventually going to be somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody mentioned on Twitter that she's the best case for nepotism in Hollywood.
Right.
But every time she's kind of on the radar for things, I'm kind of looking around. And then I watched Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and saw Taylor Page and Coleman Domingo and how incredible both of them were in it. I'm like, man, you combine all these elements. I'm not sure there's much of something I don't want in this. And I actually, the famous Twitter thread, I specifically stayed away from it. I didn't want to know too much about it. I wanted to go in fresh, and I still haven't seen the Twitter thread, and now I kind of want to go back and see how close it's skewed actually to the film.
Yeah, that's interesting that both of us hadn't read the thread.
Really?
I was certainly aware of it, and I heard about it for a while now, and especially since the movie was in production and then premiered. But yeah, I still haven't gone back and read it, but I did watch a video that kind of talks about the differences between the real life and, you know, what ended up in the movie.
Yeah.
So, but one of these days I am going to go ahead and read it, because it sounds like there's a lot in there that didn't make it in the movie. And I need to read up on some of that. But let's start getting into some puzzle pieces here. And we'll talk about a lot about the other things that go into this film along the way. But what do you got for your first puzzle piece?
My first puzzle piece is Spring Breakers.
Nice.
The chaos surrounding that film and it always felt like controlled chaos with these four girls getting into this kind of fringe side community of apart from the real world. It's almost like a fantasy, like they're trying, you know, obviously gets into real criminal elements and the wild characters that they run into, obviously James Franco's character, but at the same time just kind of the beach type proximity and the everything's just kind of at the same velour. Spring Breakers was probably the second film I ever thought of when I was watching this. I was like, man, this has got some real Spring Breakers vibe. I think this film is much more polished than that than Spring Breakers was. When I talk about the other one was much more chaos, just for like it felt like they shot, you know, 700 hours worth of footage and then somehow found that movie out of there. Where Zola feels much more concrete and put together and deliberate.
Yeah, and it's funny that, you know, Zola being based off of like we said, a series of tweets, that it would be that much more structured than, you know, a, you know, in theory, regular movie that, like, you know, just came from a script. But that's Harmony Korine for you. So,
exactly, yeah.
You know, especially this late era Harmony Korine, where it's just getting, he's just kind of leaning into his weirdness and everything that kind of just makes him what he is. But yeah, definitely Spring Breakers also on my list. And I'm sure we'll have plenty of overlap here. But sure. That movie just, you know, that insane, just over the top energy. And, you know, it kind of just captures just the most extreme of what, you know, youth is right now.
Yeah.
And I think both of these movies kind of revel in that quite a bit.
To Zola's credit, I don't think it's as lurid as Spring Breakers can be.
Sure.
It really that was the most impressive part of me for the film, is how it really held back what it could have really gone deep in. Like, there,
yeah.
Like, obviously it's been talked about a bunch, but James Franco originally was supposed to direct this movie, and I cannot imagine the chaos that would have ensued if he was ended up in the director's chair, and what would it ended up as the final product.
It also, I don't like the word problematic, but
that
would have been a problematic movie.
Yeah. James Franco, about a film centered around two women. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no good. But definitely, James Franco will come up again in a later puzzle piece for me, actually.
Ooh, nice.
You know what? I might as well just get that one out of the way since we're talking about James Franco right now. I'm going to talk about The Disaster Artist. James Franco's Tommy Wiseau biopic about the making of The Room, which this is maybe my most out of left field puzzle piece for this episode. But I just feel like the idea of, you've got one foot in this world already. In the case of The Disaster Artist, it's acting and, you know, Hollywood and all that. And then in the case of Zola, it's in the world of stripping and then going past that into sex work. And this just absolute crazy person drags you in way further than you ever wanted to be or expected to be. Mm-hmm. And everything just kind of goes off the deep end from there. And it's just this this story about, you know, being careful who you connect with, and, you know, who you let into your life and who you go on that ride with. And you know, the character Stephanie that Zola is being brought into this world with has just this insane manic energy that, you know, it's hard to top time it was so, but certainly a similar kind of crazy character.
Yeah. And I like the kind of the other sides of it for The Disaster Artist as well. Just kind of like, it's about these two main characters, but at the same time, there's such these interesting supporting characters peppering around the outsides. And Zola has so many of those just random people that pop up, and you're like, man, that was really somebody. There's never anybody in this film that kind of just shows up and doesn't really make an impression. Everybody in the film, you're just like, this is somebody. Even Jason Mitchell's stick-up artist friend, like his is like, he was, as soon as he gets disarmed, he's kind of like a little puppy, and you almost feel bad for him.
Right.
And, you know, he doesn't really say much, but he's on screen for, you know, 2 minutes and really makes an impression, things like that. So, and The Disaster Artist was filled with that, be it, you know, the celebrity cameos, or, you know, Judd Apatow yelling at him in a restaurant or whatever it could be, like,
totally.
There was nobody in the film that didn't make an impression.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on. What do you got for your next piece?
My next puzzle piece is After Hours.
Sure.
Martin Scorsese's probably one of his more underrated works. But the film I thought of the most whenever Zola was done, it was this, just mostly because After Hours has so much insanity that is treated with such banality. And in addition to all the craziness, the big difference is that Zola probably takes place over a weekend, while After Hours is one night. And all the stuff with After Hours, all this crazy stuff keeps happening. And then at the end of the day, it's just kind of done, and it goes back to normal life. And I know you have, in your review specifically, you really didn't like the ending of Zola. And
that's the hardest part to take in, because it just leaves you just with every possible question. I mean, you kind of get nothing out of that.
Yeah, it's just kind of there. And it feels like one of my favorite things about films is how short they can be if they're successful. Like an 85, like I think the I think when the credits started, I think we're 83 minutes into the film. Mm-hmm. So I liked watching the entire credits because obviously you got that nice overview of that bridge. But at the same time, like after hours ends, it starts with at the end of a day, and then it ends after all this crazy stuff happens, and the day's just over, and mm-hmm. it just starts again essentially. And I had the same thought with Zola. It starts. It has this kind of meteoric start to it, and it starts kind of out of nowhere, and then it ends kind of out of nowhere. And and all the wild stuff that happens in between. The only difference, the big difference between the two is obviously the main character in After Hours, played by Griffin Dunne. He's kind of just observing it and going like, well, this is same stuff, different day. Where Taylor Page in Zola is looking around going, this is wild. Like she's perfectly aware of how insane everything is. So that's the probably main difference, but I dig big After Hours vibes the whole time.
Sure. Yeah. And I've only seen After Hours once. It's actually been on my my watch list, like of things that I wanted to get back to this year. It's one of those Scorsese films that I haven't seen in forever, and I really need to revisit it. But yeah, so I'm glad you brought that one into the conversation. I'll go on to another puzzle piece that is, I'm sure, inspired itself by After Hours quite a bit. And that is really, I'm going to kind of cheat here and just say the work in general of the Safdie brothers.
Interesting.
We're getting a lot of A24 in this conversation, of course. But
I have another one later, don't worry.
Yeah. But, you know, just that chaotic energy of Uncut Gems and like the kind of money above all else energy of that film as well, along with this just like feeling of just, you know, chaos of good time, you know, and also just kind of like that feeling of these characters who are just like, how could they possibly survive living this way? Like just, it, just pure insanity, you know? Mm. And then even if you go into their earlier work, like Heaven Can Wait with like the kind of junky angle and like, you're kind of getting into this seedy underbelly of this particular world that you don't normally see. So, you know, you just get a lot of that chaos that they kind of imbue in their work. And so I think there's a lot of Safdie energy in this.
That's a good thought process of it. I mean, it's Zola has kind of a sheen on it that that makes it a little cleaner than I was expecting. These are in a, you know, things are populated. The world of Zola is can be pretty seedy, and some crazy stuff and some gross stuff can really happen. But at the same time, it's never really viewed through the eyes of gross and you know, back alley or things like that. Even the one real gross thing is that initial hotel that Nicholas Braun is staying in. And as soon as they get there, they go, wow, this is gross. Like it's commented on immediately. So, but I do like the energy of it. There are parts of Zola that are really super tense and few filmmakers do tension like the Safdies. So I see that connection. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from its point of view being this, you know, this woman Zola, and you know, she clearly, despite, you know, working within, you know, that particular world, you know, has a really good head on her shoulders and like, you know, sees the ridiculous aspects of some of that and of just how bad and dark things could get, but stays away from that clearly and doesn't want to, you know, engage in any of that. And so I think that comes across in the storytelling as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So what do you got for your next piece?
Okay. This is the one it's probably the most off kilter as far as with this film. My next puzzle piece is A Simple Favor.
Okay.
The Paul Feig film, with, Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. The big thing that I thought of, it's twofold. Is one is the primary relationship between the two women being not necessarily being friendly, almost combative, but at the same time being friendly, and that followed a lot with what happened in Zola with Zola and Stephanie. But the other aspect is A Simple Favor is so social media heavy, and Anna Kendrick is doing her mommy blog the whole time and connecting it back to what's going on with Blake Lively's character being missing. And obviously Zola skews a little more towards realism, which A Simple Favor gets a little out of hand, but at times, but it's still you can kind of see where the through lines are. You know, you see that relationship between those two women in A Simple Favor is such the paramount theme to that film. And Zola is so focused initially. It's really interesting the first 10 minutes of watching Zola and seeing the character of Zola and Stephanie and how they connect so immediately. And they're like, oh man, this is what a relationship. And then, you know, they start that road trip. And then 5 minutes into that road trip, and Stephanie's telling a story, and Zola goes, oh no.
Like, yeah.
This is so, the different. Yeah. So, I mean, that relationship and the friendship is the thing that drives that film. And same thing with The Simple Favor, and just kind of all coordinating it together. They definitely had the vibes.
I like that. I hadn't thought of that as a puzzle piece, but it definitely makes sense. And I love that, you know, the facial expressions that Taylor Page makes as so Zola, you could just see it internally, just what is happening, that she is looking at this girl and just, you know, but she made the decision to go with her, you mm-hmm. know, and so she realizes that, you know, she could have said no at any moment in this, yeah. but she made the decision because it would be fun, maybe for the money, maybe this seems like a bad idea, but I'm going to go for it anyway, whatever it is. And you could just see it on her face, just how complicated making that decision is for her.
and on every turn, every crazier thing that happens, she just goes further and further down. It's like, why am I here? And
this is messy.
Yeah. The scene I always think of when I think of Taylor Page that was such a perfect line reading is whenever Nicholas Braun admits that he's been talking to Jason Mitchell, and Coleman mm-hmm. Domingo bursts in, gets really mad. And he's like, we got to go. It's like, this guy's going to come in and kill us all. And Taylor Page just goes, what? And it makes me laugh so hard every time. And then Coleman Domingo's running like a chicken with his head cut off, and they run out. Yeah. But man, she is just so, every time she just, her eyes are so huge in this film in the best way. It's just so expressive. And her demeanor is, she's my best performance in the film. And, you know, Coleman Domingo and Riley Keough are so flashy, and they're mm-hmm. really splashy roles. But man, this film doesn't work without Taylor Page.
No, yeah, absolutely. And it is difficult to pick because those two other roles are just so much fun to watch. Mm. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, the film doesn't work without Taylor Page doing what she's doing. But yeah, for my next puzzle piece, it actually goes along really well with some of the stuff you're saying with A Simple Favor. And that's 2017's Ingrid Goes West. Mm. Another movie, you know, about this female friendship. Social media is heavily ingrained in it. I realized also, like, going through this list, I've got a couple. I mean, you had After Hours in there. I've got another piece coming up later that is a little bit older, but a lot of these are much more recent films that I feel like influenced this film, because I mean, it just has this energy about it that's just very young and youthful. And
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, Ingrid Goes West is one of my favorite movies of, like, you know, the last 10 years. And just this friendship, it's born out of social media, and it starts off kind of well-meaning and just goes darker and, you know, more messed up as it goes. And that's, you know, exactly how this friendship between Zola and Stephanie works out. You know, starting off with, you know, fairly good intentions, maybe. It's kind of a bit questionable with Stephanie, but you know, seemingly good intentions, at least in you know, in the moment, and things just getting darker and darker from there. And that constant social media reminder, you know, you got the Twitter bells or whatever you want to call them, the notification sounds, you know, it adds to that whole social media thing that Ingrid Goes West played with so well.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I really like Ingrid Goes West, and one of my favorite things about it is probably the least likable character is the main character herself.
Sure.
And all the side characters are, you know, it's like, well, I want to spend more time with these guys. And I really like, it's like, oh, okay, Elizabeth Olsen might be a little shallow, but I mean, she probably has her heart in the right place. And
sure.
And then, you know, all the side characters like that. This is almost the flip of that.
Yeah.
Is Zola's the only character you do like, and everybody else is kind of terrible. I mean, Nicholas Braun isn't bad, but he's so stupid.
Yes.
And he's so dumb. And even Zola's boyfriend is kind of a blank page. I'm sure on purpose. But Zola's the only one you're like, okay, this woman might have everything straight. Like, she just might be, she might just be really good at pole dancing, which she sure seems to be. And
yeah,
taking no judgment of that. Yeah.
Yeah. You wonder, I mean, I guess we're going to see, like, you know, as this movie, you know, gets out there and as things progress, like, I wonder if the actual Zola is going to end up doing more in storytelling in some way, whether that's writing or whatever, or if this is just this weird lightning in a bottle just thing that happened.
Yeah, it's. I was really thinking of that as well. It's like, can't be this can't be the only crazy story she has.
Right.
It's like, it's like, if this happened over a weekend, I can't imagine the stuff should happen over years. You know, when you're in a world like that and some crazy things happen like this, I want to hear from, if all this is, you know, this is all through the specter of one person's perspective.
Yeah.
And the film smartly at one point switches to Stephanie's perspective. And obviously she's a, you know, a nice church girl and
sure,
all,
of course.
And all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, like, the film mentions that Stephanie's done this before and brought in other dancers to kind of manipulate her way into prostitution schemes. And it's like, boy, I want to hear from them and all and the wild stuff that they had to go through. Did Stephanie do something weird with them? So, I mean, yeah, exactly. This could go a lot further. And Zola, the actual Zola, has such an interesting voice in the way she talks about things. And I'm pretty sure that some of the lines from the film are probably pulled straight from tweets.
Oh, I'm sure.
And if that's the case, then absolutely, let's see what she has more to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
My next puzzle piece is the Florida Project.
Okay.
As we said, we're sticking kind of in this world of the Florida Project gets real dark in a real way, where Zola kind of maintains this level of lightness that even when things are getting kind of dire, near the end of the film, obviously spoilers for the film, is whenever Coleman Domingo shoots Jason Mitchell.
Yeah.
Like, he shoots him in the throat and he's lying there on the bed and his buddy goes, "You all right?" It's like, has he been shot in the throat? And yeah. And then they leave, and that's pretty much the last we see of that. They run away and there's no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And the floor, and whenever I think of the Florida Project, I think of not necessarily the tone, but I think, you know, there's this world of this hotel that is self-contained and this own offshoot of this world in Florida. Obviously, it's the Florida vibes that are connecting the two for me, but
totally.
It's in this world and it's contained to this world. And the Zola world is the same thing. It's you know, you're in this one club, you're in the seedy motel, you're in the nicer motel, you're in another nicer motel. It's pretty self-contained considering, and then they're just kind of driving in between. So, and the Florida Project takes these small little notes and makes things feel real. And Zola does the same thing. Like, I have a personal hatred for a lot of stripper movies just because it's mostly film strip clubs are not real strip clubs.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, it's usually like, highly stylized dancing, guys just tossing money all over the place. And it's like, well, that's not really, it's like, I think it's pretty gross. And it's,
right.
Now whenever Zola starts stripping, she takes a spray bottle and cleans the pole. I'm like, oh, they got this already. Like, as soon as that happened,
there's some realism in this.
Exactly. There's some realism. And you felt that in the Florida Project too, where it's like, okay, I might not know this world, but all of it feels real. Mm-hmm. And all of it feels real in a way that feels down to earth. And Zola was exactly the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, you know, people make jokes about like A24 having like a Florida shared universe. Yeah. You know, the Moonlight, Waves, you know, there's all these movies that show these different sides of, you know, that Florida, but they all do share a kind of aesthetic between them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of, it's a weird thing that they do where makes sunlight look gross.
Sure.
Yeah. Like you can feel the humidity, that type of thing. And, lounging by a pool makes it look not luxurious, things like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I had some big vibes when coming through that. Like I said, the general tone of the two is different, but I mean, you can see where the connection is.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, speaking of stripper movies, I'm going to go with Hustlers from 2019.
Mm. Yes.
I mean, kind of has to come up in this conversation here, but, you know, inspired by a crazy true story, strippers, big, huge performance by J-Lo in that one. But, you know, different ideas on the mind with these two movies,
sure.
You know, different stories they're trying to tell, but just the fact that they both come from that world and they both were inspired by these insane true stories. I think that they definitely share a pretty big connection there.
Yeah, and I kept thinking that too. And then the more the film went on and kind of got away from stripping, it made me think more of Magic Mike. With the same thing. You know, this film is stripping's kind of the gateway to get into the film,
right?
And then it kind of goes from there. And Magic Mike's kind of the same way. And just like Hustlers is it's not really about stripping in any way. It's just kind of, well, that gets you into the world, and then, well, you know, there's some real economy problems, and in both, in, you know, Magic Mike and Hustlers are so close, you know, not necessarily narratively, but I mean, kind of based on the same idea of trying to get ahead in this world and how you're held back. And the fun thing about Zola is she never really takes pity on herself.
Right.
She doesn't complain about being a waitress. She doesn't complain about only making whatever it is she makes. And she doesn't care about being a stripper. And whenever she eventually makes a little bit of money on this adventure, she's not end all be all about it. It's, there are other things she has to deal with. And Magic Mike and Hustlers were the same way. It's not only about being a stripper.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like it's almost a, like you said, it's an entryway into what everything else ends up being. Mm. But I feel like it's, you know, there's still a stigma with sex work in this country and the world, really. But I feel like stripping is kind of an easier in, I guess, for more general audiences.
Yeah, it's almost like the film says, we can understand stripping. We can't understand prostitution.
Right.
But at the same time, Zola herself doesn't even care about that.
Right.
And it even takes to another level is you think about whenever Coleman Domingo's character X is in charge of the prostitution kind of business side, he's undercharging. And as soon as Zola comes in, it's like, no, you got to put more value on yourself.
Sure.
It's like when a man's in charge, it doesn't work. When a woman's in charge, it actually has the value attained to it. So, that makes total sense.
Awesome. Well, was Magic Mike a puzzle piece for you there?
It kind of not really. I had it as a side piece.
Yeah.
It was too easy. Like I was going to put Hustlers on there. I was like, he's definitely going to say Hustlers.
Yeah,
so yeah.
For
yeah.
Sure. Exactly. All right. Well, what do you got for your next piece then?
Okay. My next piece is True Romance.
Okay.
And the aspects of True Romance I thought of were not necessarily the film itself, but all these kind of the character inspirations as far as how they're developed in this film, specifically Coleman Domingo's character of X. He is so terrifying while being utterly hilarious the entire film.
Yeah.
I tweeted that that every decision he makes in this film is utterly insane and absolutely correct.
For him.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I've still been trying to figure out a way to work into my daily life the guttural "uhs" every time I go to the bathroom. And right. Man, those made me laugh. And he'd always throw an extra one in every time. But with True Romance, you know, you have these side characters like like Drexel or Floyd, and they have such an indelible impact on the film. You're like, man, this guy cannot just be in this for just a little bit. He has to be further along. And it's almost like they took a piece of True Romance, and they're like, okay, let's take a side view of this, and let's follow like Samuel Jackson's character, who's Drexel's buddy. It's like, okay, let's follow him around for a weekend and see what he does.
Yeah.
And this feels like an offshoot of that. And it kind of maintains that same tone where everything's pretty, you know, you think of there's some crazy, dark, violent stuff that happens in True Romance, but it's pretty lighthearted the whole time.
Sure.
I mean, and they kind of maintains that same tone, and this is mostly due to X, and you think, like I said, it's like if Samuel Jackson's side character and Bronson Pinchot's character all kind of got together, and Bronson right. Pinchot is Nicholas Braun, and then, you know, his prostitute girlfriend, and then she brought her friend along, and then sure. What a crazy adventure this would be. So that was the one I thought of, and also just the cavalcade of random things that pop in. True Romance is the big one that I thought of.
I like that. Yeah, I like that as a puzzle piece. And yeah, I mean, just the crazy adventure of these particular kind of characters, and you know, that meeting of violence and comedy. And yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great one. I'll go with my last piece here, and centers around that Colman Domingo X character as well. You know, this movie, you know, we've been talking about dealing with sex work and kind of the darker side of that, you know, with trafficking and all that with this particular character. I thought of Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love. Ooh. And the situation that Adam Sandler gets himself into with this phone sex line.
Yes.
And just, you know, obviously sex work is work, but there is this seedy, dirty underside filled with violent people and bad people. And Colman Domingo's ex is one of them, and he is in charge here, and he is an absolutely terrifying threat for everyone in the movie. Really everybody, whether it's the main characters of the movie or any side characters they encounter. And just like Philip Seymour Hoffman's just, you know, huge performance in Punch Drunk Love, it's just something to be seen. And like you said, it is really funny too, but in that violence, it's kind of almost like a nervous funny.
Yeah the entire time, anytime like Nicholas Braun gets hit, it makes me laugh,
right?
But at the same time, it's like, well, you just hit the crap out of him. Like,
yeah.
It's like why I shouldn't be laughing at this.
Totally.
But that's also really interesting, like that the Philip Seymour Hoffman character, and like you said, you get down such a rabbit hole of, well, he's just a lonely guy who wanted to be on a phone sex line.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you're like, oh man, this has gone way too far. And mm-hmm. You're beating up guys with a tire iron in a parking lot. And yeah, so it's kind of how things devolve from a fairly innocent state into the chaos that it becomes.
Exactly. And I think that you know, people probably, when people look down on that world, the good parts of the world that you know shouldn't really be looked down upon, I think that they're immediately going there with their thoughts, you know, and yeah. They think that that's what's, you know, gonna come of it all. And that kind of gives it a bad name in a way, that all that exists.
Yeah, it's kind of the mom going, well, you know, if you can't call this phone sex line, because before you know it, they'll start extorting you, and then they start trying to, you know, this and that, and it's like, that's kind of the worst case scenario.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's like, well, like it could happen.
But I mean
this is that story, so I understand where that makes sense. And also the comparison between Philip Seymour Hoffman in that film and Colman Domingo in this one's a really good one.
Yeah,
because like you said, it seems like X probably does something else. Like he probably has a day job.
Yeah.
That he poses as, just like Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, in that store. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden he's screaming at Adam Sandler over the phone. Yeah. So, I mean, It makes a lot of sense in that anger and that funny anger.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you have any more pieces?
Not really, big ones. The only one I had left on my list was Searching.
Okay.
Which was mostly just because of the, in addition to obviously the initial Twitter thread, social media is so important to the narrative of this film and how often they, it's kind of basing off of the tweets and then communicating back and forth through text message. And then the prostitution site is so essential to the plot as well.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially the social media for prostitution and that's so important to various sides and Searching is obviously, they're in no way the same film and
sure.
It's, and even the comparison between the two is a stretch, but it just, Searching uses so many different aspects of social media to try to unravel its narrative. And Zola doesn't stick to just Twitter. It's Twitter. And then, I forget what the site is called.
Backpage, was it?
Backpage, yes.
Yeah.
So it's Backpage and then, you know, everybody texting back and forth and then checking in and all this kind of stuff. So that was what I was thinking of at the time. But that's more of a smaller puzzle piece, just kind of the general narrative of a social media driven film.
Sure.
But
yeah. And I think that permeated a few of our other pieces here, which I'm going to go ahead and do the finished puzzle and list all those out. And then we'll get into some closing thoughts and anything like that. But we talked about Spring Breakers, The Disaster Artist, After Hours, Safdie Brothers films, including Good Time, Uncut Gems, and Heaven Can Wait. A Simple Favor, Ingrid Goes West, The Florida Project, Hustlers, Magic Mike, True Romance, Punch Drunk Love, and Searching. But yeah, like I was just saying, a lot of that like social media like kind of permeating through these pieces, most of them really. And that like I said earlier, a lot of newer movies, a lot of that youthful energy. Is there any main thoughts or points that you wanted to bring up that didn't quite come up in the puzzle pieces?
Not really. I mean, it's such an interesting film and it felt so original and, there, it feels like there's something in there that this feels like Zola's going to be a puzzle piece for a lot of future films.
Oh yeah. I could see that.
And especially, you know, the certain characterizations of, like Stephanie's character is such a interesting and, you know, arguably problematic view.
Yeah, it's a hard performance, I think, to like commit to.
Yeah, and to Riley Keough's credit, like I have seen interview after interview going, yep, this is a problem. It's supposed to be a problem.
Yeah.
This girl sucks. It's okay.
Like, yeah.
So, I mean, the general awareness of it is the big thing. And yeah, I see Zola as going to be something that's going to be really influential. Maybe I don't know how ultimately financially successful Zola is going to be, or even critically successful, not even critically, but award successful. Currently in my Oscar predictions, I have Riley Keough and Colman Domingo, but we'll have to see how the year shakes out. But I'm optimistic that it will have pretty lasting impact.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, even though I had my issues with the ending, I mean, it's such an enjoyable film and such great performances all around. Only other thing I thought about bringing up, which could in itself be a puzzle piece, but I wasn't going to use it myself, but I saw an interview with Jenixa Bravo and Jeremy Harris, the other writer, and they talked about making this a Black Odyssey. And
sure.
Hitting some of those beats of the Odyssey story. And, you know, obviously that has been, you know, something that's been the basis for so many films over the years.
Absolutely.
And yeah. So, I mean, you could totally see what they're going for there as far as, you know, bringing this character on with its own different kind of voice to that kind of a story. And so, yeah, I think that definitely fits in as well.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, like what kind of ending were you hoping for? Just something with more narrative finality?
I guess so. I mean, it didn't need to like freeze frame and tell me where everybody is now or anything like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know if getting back to Atlanta would have been enough, you know, maybe some, just something where it didn't just seem like, okay, yeah, done, you know, and plenty of movies that I like end that way too, with the abrupt, open-ended, you know, kind of, conclusion, but it just felt very abrupt in this one.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I kind of agree. I like the, you know, after Nicholas Braun throws himself off that second story, I was like, oh, he's probably not dead. And then holding a hole in his head and X screaming about it. And I did like the ending as far as like, well, the guys are in their wild worlds caring about the things they care about. And Stephanie's over there going like, hi, Zola. And Zola's like, no, none of this. And
yeah,
it's not really about the actual craziness that's happening. It's about the side thing that's actually important.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, it would have been nice to have just maybe a little more finality. Like, well, maybe they go to the hospital and then Zola sneaks out or something. You know, I'm not here to relitigate how to make their film. I love the film. So,
yeah. And apparently X is in prison now, so that's good to know.
That sounds. Know. Yeah. I sure hope he is.
Yeah.
Man alive, and I really hope Stephanie has actually found Jesus, mm-hmm, as opposed to the, oh, well, I'm just a nice little Jesus girl. Like, I don't know what's going on with her, but man. And so, but like you said, it's like we talked about earlier, it's kind of a one-sided view of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from this solo perspective, but at the same time, it's such an interestingly fun perspective that it's hard not to care about it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that does it for Zola. Is there another movie you watched recently like to recommend to our listeners?
I've been going through trying to catch up on some old Oscar blind spots that I've had. I'm notorious for getting into a year and diving into that year and then running into another year at the same time. So I think I'm doing rewatches of 1937, 1947, 1986, and 1998, while also 2000. So,
okay.
So I just keep diving down these stupid rabbit holes. But I recently watched for the first time *Children of a Lesser God*.
Okay.
From 1986. Obviously the debut of Marlee Matlin. It was I had high expectations for Marlee Matlin, and I was not let down. But it's my favorite William Hurt performance.
Okay.
So highly recommend that if you haven't checked it out. Also, saw Luca the other day, was fantastic after, you know, listened to your episode about it.
Awesome.
We almost did an episode on False Positive,
yes,
on Hulu, interesting film to say the least.
I'm going to get to it one of these days. The episode will be long in our, you know, rear view.
No, but I get it. It's like you haven't even seen the film and you're like, well, it's definitely Rosemary's Baby's a puzzle piece. So,
sure.
I mean, yeah, that kind of thing. So, yeah, just trying to catch up on all these things. The fun part about catching up is seeing on the list of the films I need to see, and you're like, "Wow, man, I can't believe I haven't seen Blue Velvet." And
right,
and it's like, "Ooh, it's kind of exciting to have to watch Blue Velvet for the first time." Even, you know, but at the same time, trying to temper your own expectations.
You know what I've realized, yeah, is there are a lot of movies out there.
So many, and. There's a radio ad and they talk about, oh man, these are all the great songs. Do you know how many bad ones we had to sort through till we got to this one?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I'm going through with my movie watching. I'm like, wow, these are so, like, I run into a lot of great movies. Like, this is great. And I'm like, man, there are some real stinkers out there though.
Mm.
And I recently did a rewatch of the movies of 1931 and 1932. And I went in with such low expectations, and pretty much everyone I watched was great. And I'm like, wow, man, that's fantastic. And I guarantee it won't be like that again. Like, I'll run into something and I go, this is terrible.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, nature of the game.
That's right. That is absolutely right. Well, Ben, why don't you tell people again where they can find you and your writing?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at NebIsBen. You can find me talking about reviews, and then I'll occasionally say the random goofy thing. You'd be like, well, that's a stupid thing to say. So you can find my site at icecreamforfreaks.com. I also write for the filmexperience.net on occasion. We're about to do a retrospective of Klute. We split it up into three parts. I get the middle third of the film, so I get to wax on about how great Gordon Willis is. And so you can find me there. And I'm also on Letterboxd at Neb810.
Awesome. Well, Ben, thank you so much for doing the show. And yeah, hopefully we can get you back sometime. I know we
Absolutely.
Were trying to do false positive, but now we got this one and I look forward to next time.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much for having me.
What's up, guys? Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast here. Are you just sitting there thinking to yourself, man, I really love some dude in his garage sitting around talking about arbitrary countdowns and his favorite things in the world of movies, music, and TV? Well, guess what? That's me. Please look me up. My name is Gerald, and I am from Two Peas on a Podcast. If you want to subscribe to my countdown show, I have a different co-host every week. It's often someone from the world of podcasting or entertainment. And we go through our top five favorite things in whatever that week's category is. You can find links to all of our content, subscribe via your favorite podcast app, and follow us on social media. The easiest thing to do is just head to our website, which is www.2peasonapod.com. I hope you look me up and join the party. It's a lot of fun. See you soon.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Zola. Thanks to Ben for joining me on this episode. Make sure to go check out his writing. And yeah, thank you everybody so much for listening. If you like what you hear here on Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Share the show with your friends. Get in touch on social media at Piecing Pod or join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. You know, all the usual stuff. I appreciate that you're all out there listening. Thank you so much. Hopefully you've been checking out all the other episodes we've been posting lately, because there's a lot. We've been covering a lot of stuff. At the time of this recording, there is just already like four episodes in the can and two more scheduled sessions, which I'm not even sure what order they're all going to go up at. But yeah, lots of podcasts coming your way. So make sure you're subscribed. So that does it for today. Let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. You know, every so often when I'm covering a movie that's got that kind of hip-hop energy to it, I will dig back into this album Success Stories by this artist Skydro that I produced about 10 years ago now. But I produced this album. It's a great album. I'm really proud of it. And it is available out there on iTunes and Spotify and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going to play a track from that. So let's see. I'm going to go with a track called Into Girlfriends. I think this would fit in well, maybe in one of those strip club scenes here in Zola. So I figure this is a good way to end the episode. So if you like what you hear, make sure to check out Skydro's album Success Stories. And thanks as always for listening. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
Hey, hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Now, I never said you were her had to touch, cause if I meant that, I would've said that much. But as such, you already taken, I need a man to come around and then you start faking. Cause when I start shaking, my pit bull awaken. And it got me feeling like Kobe on the weekend. Plus we bought three bands, plus you brought three friends. And like you said, there's no reason for you to start cheating. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Hey, lady, can I hit you square? I may be later on this blunt with shit. I know you telling me, don't you dare. No, I'm telling you, don't be scared. Say, girl, I gotta take stock. Let's make numbers exchange. If you make stocks, hit the roof and resurrect the world trade. In fact, your love is so good, you make tragedies fade. My stimulus package getting me paid. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends. I'm into girlfriends. I'm into your friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends. I'm into girlfriends. So let's be friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends. I'm into girlfriends. I'm into your friends. Hey, ladies, I'm into girlfriends. I'm into girlfriends. So let's be friends. Hey, ladies.
Yeah.
Hey, ladies.
Yeah.
girlfriends, cause I'm into girlfriends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into your friends. Hey ladies, I'm into girlfriends, I'm into girlfriends, so let's be friends.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.